The Guardian.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. Coming up, a relaunch at a railway station, but is the coalition heading off the tracks? The Lib Dems swear that there'll be consequences after the Tory rebellion on Lords reform. So are we heading for a summer of bad blood and political plotting? Also this week, from Omni Shambles to Olympi Shambles, G4S is for the high jump. The private security firm botched its staff rota for the London Games and the Home Secretary calls in the army. But will it dent the government's faith in outsourcing of vital services? Joining me to discuss all of this, we have The Guardian columnists Polly Toynbee and Jackie Ashley. And from The Observer, we welcome back Nick Cohen. Now, the coalition's always had its fault lines. Issues like health and universities have proved divisive, but it's muddled through more or less intact to the halfway point. Recently, however, the discontent has been getting louder. For the Lib Dems, reform simply cannot come soon enough to the undemocratic House of Lords. For the Tories, reform simply must be brought to undemocratic European institutions. Both parties accuse the other of hiding naked politics behind lofty language, and increasingly, the attacks are bitter and personal. Jackie, they've all disappeared from the Westminster Village for the summer now. Does that mean that the bickering stops, or are we going to have endless briefing and nasty stories running all summer, do you think?
I think there'll probably be quite a lot of briefing. I think the debates will be going on right through the summer as they try and cobble together some kind of compromise on Lords reform. There's all sorts of ideas going around, from just getting rid of the hereditaries to putting in all the reforms but without the elected element, none of which, of course, are what Nick Clegg wants, but I think he might be forced to accept something so he saves a bit of face. But I think as that is going on, we're going to be having the Conservatives increasingly saying we're not having this, because they're spending time with their constituents when they're not on the beaches in France, and finding a lot of aggression towards the Lib Dems. So they're going to be hardening their line, the rebels, if anything. And the Lib Dems are increasingly saying, so what are we going to put forward? What have we got out of this coalition? We've sold the pass on tuition fees. We've sold the pass on the NHS reforms. We didn't get PR. What on earth have we got to show for it? And they're increasingly worrying about that.
But, you know, when you say they might get some compromise on Lords reform, you've got the Tories now talking about maybe using the David Steele bill with some provision for retirement and maybe some action. I think not even in the bill, action on the remaining 92 hereditaries who survive. But if you had some change like that, no one would even notice. Surely the very least they've got to get is some kind of an election.
Well, I think it's the issue of the election that's the real problem. I think what they will do in the end is come to some kind of compromise that Nick Clegg can say, look, we've reformed the Lords, it's not perfect yet, this is the first stage, it's a process that's going to continue, but we have done a lot. It will be very pathetic, but I think that will be the fig leaf that they come up with. Now, whether the parties accept that is quite another matter. Cameron and Clegg will be happy with that, but I don't think either of their parties will.
Yes, our political editor, Toby Helm, I guess also I'll throw this in, has suggested a way that Labour could make absolute hay with all of this, in that by opposing the timetable for Lords reform, Labour split the Tory party. I mean, there's a huge division now between Cameron and his backbenchers. But Labour, in theory, believes in the elected House of Lords, has done since Keir Hardie's day. So it could now offer coalition leaders a compromise, and compel Cameron to either drop this or get it through on the back of Labour votes, which would even more infuriate his party. It would be one of those happy moments from Labour point of view when low cunning and high principle come together.
You could sort of press release that while David Cameron's on a beach somewhere, couldn't you?
You could, but I think there's another bit of low politics involved here, in that quite a lot of the people on all sides of this argument don't want the boundary changes. And they know that, in fact, if Clegg doesn't get his at least some elected element in the House of Lords, it gives them the right to vote against boundary changes. Well, a hell of a lot of the Lib Dems don't want them. I was talking to one the other week who will lose his constituency without a doubt. At least 10 of them will. A lot of them will lose chunks of their constituencies where they have pounded the pavements for years, nurturing them. A hell of a lot of the Tory rebels don't want them either. They know that in principle the party gains, but they personally won't. They don't like the look of the new patch. They get a lot of safe seats have become marginal, the result, even if they stay Tory seats, and they don't like the feel of that. So there's a lot going on underneath the surface, which isn't very much about fine, high democratic principles for the House of Lords, about which I think nobody cares very much. I think by now the Lib Dems don't care very much. It's just a matter of pride. Do they really, really mind about it more than the appalling things they voted through, the health reforms, the welfare reforms, things that really damage people's lives? Do they really care about the House of Lords more?
Can't they say, you know, it gives them some self-respect, doesn't it? It's something they've been asking for 100 years. And if they get into government for the first time in nearly 100 years and get it done, that's kind of something.
Go boasting on the doorstep about it, nobody's going to be very impressed.
I think
what's quite interesting is that Labour are already selecting now for their seats on the basis of the old boundaries, so they clearly think this ain't going to happen. The Conservatives are saying, no, we're not going to make any selections yet until we get the boundary changes through. I'm not quite sure where the Lib Dems are on this. That would be the interesting question, wouldn't it?
God, that suddenly does become an interesting question. But Nick, the disjunct you've got between politicians and people in the depth of what's now a double dip recession threatening to become a triple dive still if the Eurozone goes over the edge. And then you've got politicians. OK, the Lib Dems can say there's some high principle in the House of Lords bit, but cynics would say it would put them in a permanent swing position in the upper house because it'd be elected by PR. They'd always have the casting votes. This thing about the new...
Well, they may not. I mean, they still would get some votes.
They'd have to get some votes. it's not
guaranteed in the next election.
But you've got that prospect, and then you've got a new political map, which is really a sort of trade union issue for MPs. It's literally about who keeps what job. And that's the thing that's really animating politics.
Well, yes. I don't like these sort of rather saloon bar talk of constitutional issues don't matter. And I would say one reason we are so misgoverned is there's so little democracy in England, not in Scotland and Wales, who have devolved parliaments, and there's far too little opportunity to hold people to account. But if it becomes, as you say, and, you know, it needn't be a big issue. I mean, the Conservative Party and Lib Dems could disagree, and it could be done. The Lords would throw up a fuss, but they would look... You know, very trade union themselves. But if it goes on for a year and a half and endless late night debates in Parliament, it will seem very remote from most people's lives.
And do you have a sense, Jackie, of just I know the government's lost control of this timetable thing. It will try and bring it back in the autumn, but like, there is the prospect of this being late-night debate after late-night debate.
No, I don't think there is. I think they're already making clear they're not prepared to do that because both Clegg and Cameron are aware that they cannot spend the next 18 months sort of endlessly debating House of Lords reform. Even they can see how stupid that would look to the electorate. So I think there'll be one last attempt to fudge some kind of compromise in September. Either it will go through or it won't. I tend to think it won't. And that'll be that. Nick Clegg will be left with even more egg on his face.
And then looking a bit further ahead, Polly, the Lords will either come or go. But the question about the reshuffle is going to get louder and louder through this summer break now, isn't it? And in particular, the one reshuffle that might make a difference, Trevor Kavanagh talking about the removal of George Osborne.
Well, reshuffles enormously excite all of us, but I don't think they have very much effect out there. There's always this sort of mystique about reshuffles, which we will refresh the government. You think, hang on, you know, all the surveys show, if you stop most people in the street and show them pictures of people in the cabinet, they haven't a clue beyond about two of them. They really, really don't know who they are and don't much care. So reshuffling, I mean, one thing is absolutely essential. Jeremy Hunt cannot possibly stay in that job. I don't think he can stay in the cabinet. But
he will.
He can't stay in that job because Leveson will have to report. Well, how can Leveson give his report to Jeremy Hunt? That's just unthinkable. So that forces some kind of reshuffle. As for Osborne, well, that's an interesting question. Certainly the Sun and others have begun rooting for him to go. Doesn't mean he will.
What do you think, Nick? I mean, he's...
Well, I mean, I wonder about what Polly says about people not knowing who Osborne is, in that I've never seen a Conservative politician who... I'm sorry if this sounds superficial, but we live in an age of images, who just looks so unsuited for high office. I mean, he's a picture of the Victorian squire who's got the chambermaid pregnant and thrown her out on the street. I mean, he looks terrible for a Conservative presiding over... austerity. So I wonder, but I mean, it would be incredible for Cameron to knife his best friend.
I mean, I think
in politics,
it's highly unlikely.
Jackie, I don't think he would be as much damage, wouldn't he?
He would. And also, remember, Osborne wouldn't just go quietly, and Osborne has quite a lot of support still on the Tory backbenches.
And in the press.
And indeed, in the press. And I think, you know, the idea of a kind of furious Osborne raging through the backbenches when Cameron is already in quite a weak position, I just think I can't see it
absolutely
happening.
As far as the Omni shambles goes, Cameron is somewhat protected, his own omni-shambolic behaviour, by the fact of Osborne being there and Osborne's catastrophic budget, which just fell apart in a way that nobody's ever seen before in living memory, or possibly ever. And so as long as Osborne's there, and worse, Cameron's a bit protected.
OK, so we've knocked that one on the head. The other theory we were talking about earlier in the year was Andrew Lansley would have to go after those very unpopular health reforms went through, but the volume on that, Nick, seems to have died down a bit now. He's just quite...
He's also done a very good thing for politicians. Alistair Darling used to be very good at this, in controversial departments like transport, were just disappearing and having no press coverage at all. I didn't know. I mean, it shows how, in a funny way, the Conservatives are not. They all say they follow Blair. Blair, when he got in, said these policies, Labour's weakness on crime, whatever, damage the Labour Party. So I'll just put a stop to that. You would have thought, if you were a modern Conservative, the one thing you'd want to do is say the NHS is safe with us.
Mm.
But Lansley's just thrown all that away. He's made this an issue again. He's made people highly suspicious of the Conservatives in the NHS. He's built a structure of what friends of mine in the health service say of immense complexity that no one understands, and from now on all NHS scandals and failings will be put at the Conservative Party's door, which is the exact opposite of what they wanted when they came into power.
But at least I suppose it's put at his door when the spending
I mean, the careers of individual politicians and who's going to win, we also have a conversation with who's going to win the next general election, we don't know. But I mean, it strikes me that you should be more concerned for people who are going to have needless suffering, which they will, because on top of all this massive, complicated changes, which are always a mess and always take years to settle down, and even when by the time they've settled down, the NHS, they're torn up again, they've got to start reducing spending, and it's just going to be horrible.
OK, well, you can follow the summer of political plotting, if that's what it turns out to be, at guardian.co.uk/politics. But let's just change gear for a minute now, because the day after London won the right to host the Olympic Games back in 2005, the capital was hit with a terrorist attack that killed 52 people. Security at the Games has been a concern across Whitehall ever since. With a fortnight to go, the private contractors G4S announced that despite the multi-million pound management fees, it wouldn't meet its target for providing staff. The firm were thousands of people short and had lost track of hundreds more. The head of G4S, Nick Buckles, admitted that he'd got no idea how many people would be turning up for work on any given day. Army and police personnel have been called in to cover. Buckles, meanwhile, was called in to Parliament to explain himself, and the result was not pretty.
Mr. Buckles, it's a humiliating shambles, isn't it?
It's not where we'd want to be, that is certain.
It's a humiliating shambles for the company, yes or no?
I cannot disagree with you.
Buckles, no, I wouldn't have thought you would.
Nick Buckles, well there, buckling under the questioning from David Winnick. Jackie, we were talking before, I know you're looking forward to the Olympics. Do you think this kind of story will be forgotten if the Games just goes smoothly and Britain wins lots of gold medals, or do you think
the Games is going to go smoothly? One just senses, with all the fuss about security, there's going to be the most awful stories of queues and people not getting in and missing the event they've paid hundreds of pounds for to get these tickets. You just got to know it's not going to work, I'm afraid, don't you, after all of this? It is quite astonishing that we've got this close and still the security situation is not clear. So I think that will remain an issue, as will transport, which I think is another huge sort of problem waiting to happen. People won't be able to get into the tubes or out of the tubes in time for the event. So I think all that will probably be hopeless. Having said that, I think once the actual Games begin, and I am looking forward to them, I know it's not cool really to look forward to the Olympics, but I'm looking forward to them, I think people will get excited by the athletics, by the swimming, by all the sport. And I think probably at the end of it, that'll be what's remembered, not the shambles of the security and the transport.
But it's a sign, Polly, you were saying this week in a column of a wider issue of outsourcing what's been going on with G4S.
Yes, I think it undermines a lot of the government's strategy. Outsourcing is their main big idea. It was in their open public services white paper exactly a year ago, when the presumption would be that everything public could be outsourced and bid for. That was what Cameron said, and he said he will stop civil servants getting in the way. And of course that's at the heart of the health reforms, that every part of the NHS is now up for grabs to any bidder. And this is true of everything else too. Well, I think G4S, along with Capita Serco. I think that spotlight is going to be on them so much in all the other services they provide. A lot of them are providing, for instance, the work programme, which is in the process of disintegrating. A lot of these big programmes are going to come apart. And who steps in? Well, you know, suddenly there's a much beleaguered DWP will suddenly have to rehire all the people that they fired and take over a lot of that work again. And that's going to happen in one field after another. So I think it's a really serious problem. And this is just the tip, one most embarrassing bit. You hope to goodness nothing terrible happens over security beyond long queues and inconvenience.
But you couldn't have had full-time coppers hired to run security at the Olympics, could you? And then sack them all when the games... It needed to be a more flexible setup.
It did, but you could have at least put them in charge and then maybe they'd have had to hire people on temporary basis or whatever. But you could have had the people who really know about it in charge. I mean, pretty scary stories the government, the Guardian's been having of people who are... three times failed the test for for electronic scanners and nevertheless we said, oh, well, never mind, go ahead and do it anyway. So, you know, I don't think we can be very secure that perhaps the army and police will now oversee it and make sure that nobody utterly inept is in charge of anything important. But you worry about things like crowd surges. You know, the police and army have some idea how to deal with those. Do people hired for... you know, a couple of weeks on a 0 hours contract for G4S and don't speak English, then some of them turn out to be illegal immigrants anyway, probably being arrested by the police that they're working with. what a shambles.
Oh, dear. And, Nick, there are other aspects that people are worried about in terms of the corporate takeover of the Olympics, aren't there? It's not just the kind of the back end. It's also what you see on the screen and the front end and... the bags of chips and where you have to buy them from.
Yeah, I've banged on about this. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. Labour, not the Conservatives, Labour passed an act which just hugely extended copyright control. So it's not just the Olympic logo and the Olympic name and the Olympic slogan and the rings, but it's the common nouns. Common nouns are now private property. You cannot join 2012, London 2012, the games with bronze, silver, gold, and other words associated with the games, which are not trademark. They are trademark now. There is a legal restriction on you can't link to the Olympics website if you're critical of it.
What?
No, it's true. It's
Where's
true.
That
I'm
come
not making
from?
It up. It's come from Locock and it's come from the 2006 Act.
You're having
florists in Hanley in Stoke-on-Trent having floral displays of Olympic rings taken down, a butcher in Weymouth having sausages shaped in Olympic rings taken down. And you do feel that two things. One, ministers really sold the pass on all of this. I mean, I know to get the Olympics you have to agree to pretty tough restrictions, but there was no feeling for freedom of speech. And judges I know in this area are very worried that now this extension of copyright has been set, other firms will start saying, multinationals will start saying, we want greater control, we want beyond just misuse of our trademarks. Of course, every company and organisation is entitled to defend. And the other is it to me shows the weakness of free speech in Britain. The judiciary are very poor on this, very poor indeed. They took the Human Rights Act on privacy and have built a vast superstructure on law. But Article 10 that guarantees freedom of speech within limits, because there are always limits, there's hardly any new law coming on this. And you see barristers I know give up. You know, they could fight cases on instead of fighting the actual conviction, they could fight cases, this is a breach of Article 10, it's a breach of our rights to freedom of speech, but they give up doing it. The judges aren't interested. So it's not a very nice comment on Britain this is happening.
But do you think, is it the same? Because I know that what the government would say about this is, oh, everyone who has the Olympics now, it's a standard issue bill you have to pass.
Oh, well, would it? I mean, suppose America had the Games again. Yeah. They could get some of it through, but they'll be open to challenges under the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of religion, speech and the press. In theory, they should be open to challenge in Britain, and judges are expecting challenge, but I wonder if the challenges will get through. It's also rather spoiling the atmosphere. I mean, I wandered about the shopping centre. There's a Westfield shopping centre next to the Olympics, and you'd never guess it was next to the Olympics because the restrictions are so tight. There's no come and have your Olympics breakfast at our diner or anything like that. It's just, you'd never guess it was on. You might be at a shopping centre in Shanghai or San Francisco. It's,
I just thought it's against their interest to do that. I mean, surely they want to raise the profile of the Olympics, so you want kind of Olympic haircuts and Olympic lunches and Olympic.
I was in Oldbury yesterday, and I passed a chemist with the Olympic local chemist with the Olympic rings in his window, and saying "Go Team GB." And I thought, this is a sign of revolution. This is resistance. It's absurd. I mean, it is against their interest, Jackie. But the sponsors' power is so great. They just want to stop any of their competitors doing. I mean,
it is disgusting. The idea that you can eat nothing but McDonald's in the tab, does it mean the athletes can only eat McDonald's and drink Heineken?
Well, I doubt they win if they did, Paul. it's quite interesting. Well, actually, I say when you talk to Olympics people, they wouldn't talk to me. But in their statements, they say we don't want companies getting a parasitical relationship with the games when they haven't given money. I really wouldn't throw around words like parasite when you're allowing Coca-Cola and McDonald's to sponsor top quality athletics. I mean, who is the parasite here?
No, it's striking, isn't it? And as journalists, it's going to make everyone want to kind of pick holes in it, which, you know, journalists often don't need much encouragement to.
Quite right.
Just to turn, as is our village duty, back to whether this will do anything to politics or not, Jackie, a great haul of gold medals and a belated bit of sun. Will that make everyone feel so great about being British again?
The feel-good factor. Well, we didn't really get much of a kickback from the Diamond Jubilee, did we? I mean, I don't think Cameron's ratings shot up dramatically. I suppose the weather was bad then. I think there'll be a bit of, go us. But, you know, by the time of the next election, there'll have been another disastrous football tournament, I think, which is probably far more effective for the national psyche than winning some gold medals at the Olympics. So I don't think it will do much. I think the sun might do a bit more, but I'm not sure that's going to come out either.
And Polly, I know that in number 10, they're kind of not really regarding it as recess till the Olympics has been and gone, because there'll be lots of speeches and good communications opportunities. But however good it is, it's not going to be like England winning the World Cup, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I have no idea how many gold medals we win, and I'm not sure that it's all that significant how many we do or don't. I think it matters that the thing works well and that there's a general atmosphere of goodwill and that there aren't terrible queues and disasters and bad things happening. But certainly Labour were very gloomily looking ahead to this year as, oh dear, this is the year when there should be midterm blues, when there won't, because everybody will be so buoyed up by the Jubilee and the Olympics. And I don't think there's going to be any sign of that kick at all. I mean, you know, Labour may not be as much ahead as it ought to be, but its lead has really solidified, according to the pollsters. So, you know, maybe the midterm dip may be something more permanent.
And Nick, do you think if there's one politician who's going to thrive out of this Olympics, it's probably not a Westminster player, but Boris Johnson, who's going to be absolutely at the centre of things, isn't he?
Well, I'm sure he will. I wonder, though, how much he'll benefit. It's very odd how people are promoted as next leaders of their party. There's a very good, I recommend a book to your listeners, a very good biography of Johnson by Sonia Purnell, which you ought to read because Johnson's friends in the Tory media did everything they could to trash it, and they were even threatening the BBC if they put Sonia on. And actually, it's not a polemic; it's a quietly meticulous examination of Johnson's career, which is all more devastating for that. And Sonia makes a point that Johnson has conquered virtually every establishment institution in Britain: Eton, the Bullingdon Club, the Oxford Union, the BBC, the Telegraph. But the one place where he completely flopped was the House of Commons. Just virtually disappeared from view, because in the way the often synthetic, sorry to do down my own kind, but slightly synthetic rage you can get in a newspaper column and you can keep up over 1,000 words, it falls apart in the intense scrutiny of the Commons. I just wonder about him being the king over the water for the Tories.
So, it will be a seemingly rather light on politics Olympics, if our analysis is right. We'll see about that soon enough, because it'll be getting going in a week's time. My thanks to Nick Cohen, to Jackie Ashley and to Polly Toynbee. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.